This is so wizard, Andy.
This is Montego Bradley from Fans of Patrol, and you're listening to the Geek World All-Stars Podcast Network.
Broadcasting very fast and very dangerous from the planet Malastare, you are listening to So Wizard.
You're thinking, you said people gonna die?
The only podcast to make the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs.
There'll be no one to stop us this time.
What's going on, everybody? It is time for episode number 508 of the So Wizard Podcast. I am your host, Joey DiCarlo, and with me, my co-hosts. She's back, the queen of all nerds, Aubrey Litchfield.
That's so wizard, Aubrey.
And Mark Ablocade is perfectly legal. The expert, Mr. Marquis Marcellus Reagan.
Oh, there's a storm coming, Annie. I could feel it in my bones.
You are listening to So Wizard Podcast, where three friends review movies, TV, and sometimes more, podcasting weekly on the Geek World All-Stars Podcast Network. This week, we've got our retro review for the 25th anniversary, 25 years, oh my God, I feel old, of Star Wars, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. But before we get into all that, how's everyone doing this week? Aubrey, we missed you last week. How are you doing?
I'm surviving. Nothing much, I guess, that's going on. Nothing crazy happened in the past few weeks that I can remember. So I guess that is what it is.
All right. Just working, sleeping, and existing.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. I know you can't tell us anything about work, so, you know, it is what it is. But at least you're still employed after we reviewed Fallout. So
I know. I am still employed.
Excellent. Well, it's a good thing you don't work for whoever made Abigail, because you probably would have been from Mark's review.
Oh no.
Mark Ellis Reagans, how the hell are you?
I am doing pretty good. I am still working on some new designs for the public store. Very excited about getting those finished. I've been doing pretty good. I'm working on some more designs, and I was very, very, very excited to not have to go to the movies this weekend because it's a lot.
I try my best when I make the schedule not to kill us. I know, I want to say a year or two ago, we did like 10 weeks in a row where we went to the movies.
Yeah.
That was brutal. And at the time I had nights and weekends off and I was working 13 minutes from my house. So it was a little easier to pull off. I had a job where I could, if I wanted to, go to a Thursday night showing and just roll into work a complete mess at 8 a.m. the next day and it would have been okay. But I don't have that anymore.
So. Right.
And by I say roll in at 8 a.m., it means I woke up at 7:40. Oh, man, I am just exhausted. I know this is a shocking development, but work has been crazy the last week. And then the next couple of weeks are going to be crazy because a lot of my coworkers have days off or vacations. So all that stuff's got to get covered. And you know who has to cover it all?
Yes, the man in charge.
That's right. So, you know, when things are cracking and I have my Monday through Friday schedule, and yeah, I mean, I work early, you know, 4 a.m. to 2, 4 a.m. to 2, 6 to 4, 6 to 4, and then usually like 5 to 2 or something like that. You know, those are early days. They're not easy. It's not easy, but it's manageable. And then I have, you know, Friday night off, Saturday and Sunday. But, you know, covering people's vacations and just desperately trying to get bodies in the door and the place covered. There's, you know, I work in like 6 days next week. I'm working Saturday, I'm working nights, I'm working afternoons. It's just like, oh my God, it's exhausting. And then my wife and I, we've been going to a lot of concerts all of a sudden. This will be our third concert we went to in the last 2 months. We went to see, it was a show only 10 minutes from our house. So it was at a theater in downtown where I live, East Hampton, Massachusetts, at the Marigold Theater. They had a ska show. And there's five bands that played. Four of them were like newer bands. And the people in the bands looked like they were like 12 to me. So, but they were good. There's a lot of really good bands that played. Everybody looked really young. But then the main band was Springheel Jack, which I don't know if you guys know who that is. But
I know who it is.
Okay. Yeah. They used to play. They're from Connecticut and they were huge. not just regionally, but like they had a major label album in the 90s. They were toured constantly, but they were huge in this area when I was a teenager, even before I was dating my wife. And then when I was dating my wife, we used to go to their shows all the time. And we're like, holy crap, they're playing 10 minutes from our house. Let's just fucking go. And we'll party like it's 1995 again. And we went, and there were a lot of people there. And I got to see a lot of people I hadn't seen in a long time from the Western Massachusetts, like punk rock, hardcore ska show scene in the 90s, which was made me feel really old. But it was a great time. But man, we danced and we had fun. And then like, man, I'm like, oh man, I hurt. Like my shoulders hurt, my thighs hurt, my calves hurt. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God. And I was saying to my wife, how the fuck did we do this? And then we would do this like sometimes twice a week. At the height, I was going to shows like three nights a week, going to school, working. I would go to a show. We'd get out of the show at like 11, drenched in sweat and fucking dancing and quote unquote moshing all night. And then go to Denny's until like 3 a.m. and then get up and be at work for 10 the next morning. And it was like nothing happened. So now I'm a mess. I need like a week off. So.
Of course.
But the show was awesome. So, but the sad thing is, I think that's really it for concerts for me and Jen until November. So we had a whole bunch with three in like 6 weeks, and now we have nothing until we go see Iron Maiden this November. So, but that's okay. We'll find other things to do. But I love going to concerts, and there's just sucks as a lot of them are really expensive, but we'll have a good time. We have good times, good times. So that's why I'm exhausted today, but we're going to power through for you, the listeners. And enough about us, Mark, you know, enough. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk a little bit more about us. Please tell the listeners where they can find more So Wizard Podcast.
All right, everybody, you can head on over to SoWizardPodcast.com, and there you're going to find a brand new episode every week. You will also find comic book, TV, and movie reviews, along with some creator interviews conducted by the one and only Adam Wallyhawk. And you can check out Adam's original comic book, Social Studies, over at socialstudiescomic.com. You're also going to find some links to our podcast merchandise, t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, magnets, coffee mugs, a whole array of items that you can purchase and represent So Wizard Podcast. Our social media links are there too. So reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and let us know what you think of the show. Find So Wizard on all podcasting streaming platforms such as iTunes, Spotify, Good Pods, and pretty much wherever you can find a podcast. Check out our YouTube page, where new content is being uploaded regularly. We also have a Patreon page. For as little as $1 a month, you can receive exclusive bonus content while you're supporting the show. A special shout out goes to the Geek World All-Stars Podcast Network. And I'm talking about Fans on Patrol, Pop Prism Power Podcast, Colt 45, The Movie Podcast, Superhero Speak, and The Gorilla Brain Podcast. That's it for me. Back to you, Joey.
No, I didn't. First of all, a podcast takes a lot of work. Okay? You have to organize the guests, you have to do a Google Calendar, and you build a following. It takes a long time, and I've been working on it for a while. Okay?
All right, we are back. So, you know, we're going to retro review something, which we haven't done in a while. We did a bunch of it during the pandemic. Remember when we thought it was only going to be like 4 weeks of retro reviews and then we'd be right back to go to the movie theater?
Yep.
That's a funny episode. You can go back and I think it was Bloodshot was, of all things. It's the last movie we saw in the movie theater before everything shut down. And we're like, yeah, a couple weeks or so, we'll be right back to go. It was the narrator. It was not a couple weeks, but we're going to retro review Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. It is the 25th anniversary this year of this film. I don't know if we really need to even delineate spoilers, but just to keep with grand tradition, we'll talk non-spoiler for a little while. We'll talk about what we were doing around that time, what it was like going to see it around that time, and our general thoughts on the movie. And then we'll drop the drop just in case you haven't seen a 25-year-old Star Wars movie. And then we'll talk a little more in depth about the film. And I guess we'll try to score it from 0 to 5, 25 years later. So To get started, Aubrey Litchfield, you are the youngest of us. Did you see this in the movie theater?
I did. I actually, it was to the point where I had a Star Wars Pepsi hat that was like exclusive for that movie. Star Wars Episode 1 did like a huge collaboration with Pepsi, for those who don't know.
Oh, we know.
For the listeners that are younger than me somehow, if we have any. But they did that huge Pepsi collaboration where all of the Pepsi cans like had each character on it, went as far as like collecting those. So I went as far as collecting those, and then I remember collecting like the Doritos. They had the 3D Doritos too. So yeah, I did see this in theaters. I was really excited. I was about 9 years old when this came out. So
Jesus, making me feel super old. Yeah. Making me feel super old, Aubrey, but do you remember anything about your movie going experience, or was it just a blur?
I'm pretty sure. And it was just a blur. I do remember being very excited about it and being very pumped up. But yeah, it's just a blur.
All right. Marcellus Reagans, did you work at the movie theater when this came out, or were you just a huge movie fan when this came out?
Yeah, when this one came out, I believe I was working at the theaters. I had this thing where, because I love Star Wars so much that I refused to work at the movie theaters when there was a Star Wars movie playing. So like when the re-releases came out in 97, I want to say 98, I quit. Yeah, like, all right, I'm not working anymore. And then when they were gone, I came back. So yeah, and then when Phantom Menace, like right before Phantom Menace came out, I actually quit again. I left my job at the movie theaters to go work at Toy Store, KB Toys in Chicopee, Massachusetts, only because I wanted to be first to get my hands on a new Star Wars toys. That's why. That's the only reason. A buddy of mine was working there. He was going to be a manager. He needed someone to work. And I'm like, this would be a great opportunity for me to be first in line to get some of those Star Wars, sweet, sweet Star Wars action figures. So I quit my job, went to work at KB Toys, and wound up with an insane amount of Star Wars action figures that I no longer have, ironically.
That is funny. That is funny. What about the movie going experience when you finally got to see it? What was that like?
Oh, you know, it's funny. The former co-host of So Was Her Podcast, Tom, was also working at the movie theaters at that time. And back in the day, before there was digital billboards, we had to go up and change the marquee signs. So when you're driving down the street and you see like the sign that says what movies are playing there, you know,
they don't even have that anymore, by the way. Just, you know,
it's, I'm sure somewhere in this big grand country of ours, somewhere in the world.
Some of our, if you're out there listening and your local movie theater still has this, please let us know.
So they did eventually have it so that you could still see it now, like freaking like McDonald's and Burger King. You know, they're just like plastic, clear plastic squares with letters on them, and they slide across the board to, you know, and you can spell out whatever you want. Back in Phantom Menace time, those weren't even invented yet. Like, they didn't even have those yet. So each letter was like a big plastic 3D printout letter with a metal clip in the back, and you had to clip each one to the board. So doing the marquee for when the new movies came out was just a dangerous job. You had to get like a 10-foot ladder and climb to the level of the marquee, and then pull the ladder up and then climb on that ladder to put the letters up. And it's just dangerous and scary and just horrific. But I had an awesome picture of Tom changing the letters for The Phantom Menace when it came out in the theaters that day. And it was, you know, it was a monumentous moment because here we are, 1999, and there's a new Star Wars movie hitting the theaters, and there's my buddy Tom up there advertising it for the world. I loved it. So yeah, my experience at the movie, it was like heaven sent. I was completely in my glory. I love Star Wars so much. I totally drank the Kool-Aid, super hyped for the movie. It was a religious experience watching it in the theaters.
Yeah, no, I agree. Man, like, the buildup to this coming out was pure insanity. Aubrey, since you were a little younger, you probably didn't experience some of this, but when the trailer came out, so this is how long ago this was to some of our listeners. There was no YouTube. There was internet, but there wasn't internet like there is today.
Right.
Like, it was all dial up, so it was really slow. So the trailer came out, and well, it was the teaser came out, and you could download it off Lucasfilm's website, but it took 13 hours to download a single teaser trailer of the movie. Or you could go see a movie, and I'm trying to remember what movie it was. I want to say Meet Joe Black or something else like that.
Meet Joe Black was the teaser, and then
Wing Commander was the actual trailer.
Right, exactly.
Because, and I've talked about this before on the show a long time ago when we talked about Star Wars, but people would go to the movies just to see the trailer. And I don't remember what movie it was, but I went to see the teaser, and obviously we paid full price. We watched the teaser and we left. And I remember that's the first time I remember crying in a movie theater. And I'm sorry, and you can make fun of me all that you want, but the music, like that teaser is like chef's kiss, man. That the music swells and you hear like the Force theme, and it's like every generation has a legend. And I just fucking lost it. I'm bawling because Star Wars had been gone. It had been gone since Return of the Jedi for the most part. I mean, there wasn't even really comic books. There was, you know, not a couple novels, some video games, but, you know, obviously we had, you know, the hype starting up now for this, but it had been gone for so long and it meant so much, like, for it to come back. I couldn't even fucking control myself. I thought they were gonna have to take me out in a fucking ambulance. I'm not kidding. But whatever it was, we left immediately after the trailer. And then the second trailer came out for Wing Commander, and I will never forget this as long as I live. Me and Derek went, and we paid full price. We got there. We sat down. We ready for the trailer. And the theater was sold out. Sold out showing of Wing Commander. And we watched the trailer. Everybody's cheering and going nuts. And then it was silent. And this big fat guy that was a couple rows in front of us stood up and he clapped his hands. And he goes, "Show's over, folks." And then 99.9% of the theater left. And we watched like 10 minutes of Wing Commander, and it was such ass on ass that we left. And then they had the first official Star Wars convention. So Star Wars Celebration 1 is the first time. And that, again, this is another thing where it feels like, wow, like there was a convention, but like, and there's conventions everywhere now. Like you hit a point in the summer. I don't know how it is other places of the world, but like in the Northeast area, that you hit a point in the summer where you could go to a con every single week straight through to Rhode Island in November and not go to the same one twice. You know, you're just nonstop cons. At the time, it wasn't like that. So they had the first official Star Wars convention, Star Wars Celebration 1. It was in Denver, Colorado. And me, Tom, Derek, a couple other people that went. It was like Ed, Doug, like a bunch of friends from that time. We all went. We flew out to Denver to go to a Star Wars convention. And it was a disaster. It was a disaster. The fan club ran the convention, and they didn't expect as many people to show up. Their facilities had a capacity of like 18,000 people or something, and they sold 50,000 tickets. And they were like, yeah, but everybody's not going to come at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, people will be leaving. People will be going in and out. Like, it's not going to be everyone there. Everyone showed up. There was a line outside that was like miles long to get in. And it was also the worst rain in 20 years in Denver. So we're standing outside in this line that was miles long in the pouring rain, like torrential downpour, pouring rain. And this was like, you know, pre-cell phone. So I have like actual pictures of myself from there. And you can see I'm drenched once we got inside, and you can see I'm drenched in like my pants are wet. I had jeans on. They're wet up to like the middle of my shins. Like I stepped in a giant puddle. I mean, we had a blast, but like it was so bad and people were getting so angry. They had legitimately had Anthony Daniels just walking up and down the line, like hanging out with people and talking to you to like keep you happy, keep people happy, because people were like at near riot levels of anger. Mm-hmm. But we get to meet Anthony Daniels. That was cool. Randomly in front of us in line was the kid from Independence Day, that Randy Quaid's son.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, "Dad, what is he doing?" That kid. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so that kid was just randomly in front of us in line for no reason. And, like, we didn't even fucking care. We were just like, ah, Star Wars, who cares about this? Now I probably would have been a little more excited about it. But so we finally got inside, and they had a whole bunch of cool stuff there. And then they had different panels and things. We got to see, what's his name? Ray Park did a whole, and this is a thing. He probably does this now everywhere, but at the time, this was like, you'd never seen anything like this. Like, he did a whole, like, martial arts exhibition on stage. It was really cool. He had, like, swords with, like, paper on them. He was spinning around. I don't know. It was cool. And we got to meet Rick McCallum, who's the producer.
Nice.
He swears a lot.
Yes, I would. Dude, I just realized that I was watching. I'll save it for later, but I was watching something with Rick McCallum, and I'm like, he is swearing a lot.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And yes, he does swear a lot. And the funny thing is, at the time, he said his biggest fear was that, because this was prequels or sequels, the sequel trilogy is just a twinkle in the eye of, and no one ever envisioned that would ever happen. But he said his greatest fear was he would be in his mid to late 70s, roll over in bed, and the phone's ringing, and it's George Lucas's kids who are like, we spent all the money, we have to make more movies, get on the plane to Dubai. Which was really funny. But, you know, he was cool. That was cool. And it was a really good time. And then we flew home. And when we flew home, Mark, we landed in Boston. And we had planned our flight home specifically because the new action figures went on sale at midnight. So we landed, and this is pre-9/11, so you could run through the airport. Right. We landed at like 11:20, and we ran through the airport, got our bags, ran to the car, and drove like 150 miles an hour to the mall outside of Boston, where there was a Toys R Us, so we could literally fight with other nerds in like a near riot. To get action figures. And I specifically saved like $200 cash that I didn't spend in Denver so I could blow it on action figures when we got home.
Nice.
And that was pre-gaming. The only other funny thing about Star Wars Celebration, and I've talked about it again before a long time ago on the show, is that obviously, clearly it didn't live up to the hype of what was hyped in the Star Wars Insider and everything, but they promised a unique Star Wars dining experience. They promised this in the brochure. There would be a unique Star Wars dining experience. Do you guys remember what that unique dining experience was?
I do not.
I want to say it was some Pizza Hut.
It was a tent with picnic tables in it, and they would sell you Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, or KFC.
Wow.
That's very 90s.
And the other thing, Aubrey, you mentioned those cans. So mm-hmm. Pepsi was testing a new soda called Storm, and it was their answer to Sprite. So that was the secret extra can. And it was only available in certain markets, and the Denver area was one of those markets. So we took a taxi to go looking for cases of Storm soda.
Wow.
If you're wondering why Jen has no fear of me doing anything when I go to these things, it was wild. It was a wild time. I look back on it fondly, and as weird and as lame as it was, I think it was probably more fun than going to whatever the next real Star Wars celebration would be, because now it's a con that runs like a machine. You know how cons are now. It's like everything is expensive. Meet these people, pay money, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Where this was just chaos.
Yeah,
it was really fun. It was crazy, but we had a good time. So that was the hype for me. And then obviously I went to see it in the theater, and I got special tickets so me and Jen could go. And I didn't go to the first showing. It was on like a Friday night. And because I wanted to go with Jen, for some reason in my head, it was super important that I go to see this with my fiance. This is how long ago this is. We weren't even married yet. Oh my God. And we went to see it, and it was crazy, and the crowd was nuts. And then I saw it, I think, 4 more times in the movie theater that summer.
Yeah.
And that was the excitement, man. It was just wild. I remember the other funny thing about Star Wars is I had a friend that was a girl in high school that, you know, I'm sure she knew, but I was ultra friend zoned by. I was madly in love with her until I started dating my wife. And she gave me her picture one year, her school picture, and on the back of it, because they had just announced that Star Wars Episode 1 was in the works, and she had written on the back of it, consider it a date to see the new Star Wars.
Wow.
And I didn't need that charity date after all, but you know, it was what a wild time. But Wow. It's crazy. I love Star Wars so much, but then I think back like, man, that was so nuts. Like that was so crazy.
It took over like everything. Like the announcement of a new Star Wars, like coming back and that we're going to get the prequel story. Oh my God. Like the hype was insane. It was absolutely insane. And you know, it hasn't been, I don't think anything's been replicated like that since until the MCU movies until the event.
I think like Endgame was probably the closest that we had. That was probably the closest, but even that wasn't as crazy. So, and Force Awakens was nuts, but it was probably like 40% of how nuts episode one was. So, well, that was all the fun leading up to the movie, but then we actually had to watch the movie. And I think we should review it like we do every other movie now. I think we should look back on it without, you know, the rose tinted glasses of time. And we're going to, you know, give it a review. We'll do it just like always. We'll give our non-spoiler impression. And then we will, drop delineating spoilers. Because if you haven't seen it yet, I guess it's now's the time. It's on Disney Plus. And we'll talk a little more in depth. So, Markelis Reagans, 25 years later, what do you think about The Phantom Menace?
God, this movie is one of the most conflicting movies, I think, that I've ever watched. There are... Okay, so my initial reaction when I saw it in 99 was it was genius. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I saw it multiple times in the theaters. And then afterwards, like way afterwards, after the trilogy was done, revisiting it, I'm like, I can see the flaws. Like the movie did not give me the Star Wars experience that I wanted because I wanted to kind of relive my childhood. It didn't quite give me that, but it's still... You know, it's not a cookie cutter of episode 4. We won't get that until Force Awakens. But for the time, it was something original. And, you know, it depending on the day of the week, either I love the movie or I'm not a fan of the movie. I went to go see it again when it came back in the theaters when they did the 3D release of it. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be amazing. Pod race in 3D, the freaking battle at the end in 3D. I'm all for it. And I had a horrible time watching that movie in 3D. I don't know what it was. But I was just like, this movie sucks ass. It just did not work for me.
I think that 3D re-release was cursed because I had a fine time seeing the movie, but I had a horrible time getting to the movie.
Okay.
At the time that came back out, I was selling cars. And I had a customer that wanted to come back in on my day off when I was supposed to go to the movies. And, you know, obviously that's money. So I went in and it was supposed to be real quick, dink, dink, dink. And it turned into like a 4-hour thing. And I ended up having to go to like 2 showings later. And I was so mad because I was going with my daughter. And it was just like every time I looked at my watch and I'm like, it's going to be later now. It's going to be later. And so, yeah, I think that the 3D re-release was cursed.
Yeah, it must have been. It must have been. But, you know, I've watched the movie a couple of times since then, and I love it. I still love it. I think the movie it's not like episode 4, 5, and 6. It's something completely original. Story-wise, it's great, but from a technical standpoint, it's ridiculous what George Lucas was able to do with episode 1. So, yeah, I still love it.
All right. Aubrey Litchfield, how do you now feel about The Phantom Menace?
So I think it's a little bit different for me because I saw this in theaters as a kid. And there's always some special magic to seeing a movie like this in theaters as a kid. So whenever I watch this, it still has that nostalgia feeling for me, which I think I've mentioned in the past on the podcast a couple times that episode 1 definitely holds a special place in my heart because that is the first Star Wars I saw in theaters. And like I grew up watching 4, 5, and 6. We would rent them from Blockbuster all the time, but this was the first one I got to see in theaters. So it is very special for me. Watching it is still very special for me. It can't completely disappoint me because it has like that magic to it still.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I just watched this today as we record that.
Nice.
So, I know I have a weird relationship with the prequels, and it's hard, like Aubrey said, it's very hard to divorce this movie from everything that happened around the time that it came out. It's very hard. There was just a moment in time, probably everything up to the movie coming out, where it felt like Star Wars was invincible, and it felt like this was our moment. And, you know, I loved the movie when it first came out. Obviously, I saw it 4 times in the movie theater. I remember Jen saying, thank God it didn't suck, because I don't know how I was going to console you. But, you know, and then I had my time where, you know, over time, you know, my opinion slowly got worse and worse of it. And I think it, at the end of the day, I think my opinion settled on, you know, it has some really great things in it and some really bad things in it. And it's very uneven, but it's the movie George Lucas wanted to make.
Exactly.
It's watching it today, it just has such a different feel than anything that's Star Wars now. And one of those things is it's legitimately made for kids. Like, this is a kid's movie. Like, he made no qualms that the original trilogy was for kids. And there's no, like, this has to be dark, this has to be boring, this has to be Andor. Like, it's a fucking kid's movie.
Right.
And it's a good kid's movie. And even today, and even just watching it on my phone, yeah, some of the effects aren't very special. I think a lot of the Gungan CGI didn't hold up. But there are still shots in this movie that are gorgeous and blow away movies that we've seen in the last, like, 12 months. It's insane how incredible some of the special effects are in this. So, you know, I don't hate it, but I'm not going to sit here and put it in my top tier of Star Wars movies. But I definitely enjoyed it a lot more than I remembered enjoying it now. So maybe I'm getting soft in my old age, but yeah, I'm still there for it, man. I'm still there for it. It's hard to say no to Star Wars, but it just has that weird whimsy to it where it feels like a kid's movie. So
yeah. Plus it's got Darth Maul in it, who is arguably one of the coolest characters in the Star Wars pantheon, other than Boba Fett. You know, you get his full Darth Maul shine in Episode 1, and that just makes it awesome.
And it's, I don't want to say it's organic, because obviously, like, you know, they designed him to look cool and they gave him cool stuff to do, but it never feels like they're like, okay, this is going to be the next Boba Fett. He doesn't have I can't even remember the fucking name of the character. What's her name that was in Game of Thrones and then she was in the prequels and she was all silver?
Phasma, Captain Phasma.
Yeah, it doesn't have that Captain Phasma feel to it where somebody said, we need to make a cool Boba Fett character. Like, that felt forced. but this feels organic. Everything about this movie feels like it's like, this is what George Lucas wanted to do, and fuck you if you don't like it.
Yeah, exactly.
He has fuck you money and he's going to do whatever he wants. So, well, now you kind of know what we thought about the movie recently. I guess spoilers for a 25-year-old movie. Mark Ellis, please drop the drop. Let's spoil The Phantom Menace.
And we're now let's talk about spoilers here.
I've got some spoilers. One clear spoiler. Yeah, here's a spoiler. You will die alone.
Which is, funnily enough, that is from Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, making fun of people waiting in line to see Episode 2. Which I guess we'd be doing a 25th anniversary podcast of in 3 years. So,
yeah.
Why not? Put it on the schedule. All right, Aubrey, tell me some things you like about this movie.
All right. So I like the pod racing, first of all. I think everybody really enjoyed that. I liked the games that came out of pod racing. So every arcade had a pod racing game. And that was really fucking awesome. I remember me and my brother would just play that nonstop. We'd go to the arcade and play the pod racing game all the time. I liked the idea of Naboo. At the time, I really liked Jar Jar growing up. When I was little, it worked for me. And I know that Jar Jar is like one of the most hated characters in Star Wars. And I can't change 8-year-old my brain. So I liked that. I liked kind of the backstory of Anakin and his family and how he comes to be with Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan. And I think that they, at the time, did really good acting. Like, I can't ever see anybody else as Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn. I just can't. I think, like, artistically and creatively, like, the design of the characters was really well done. Princess Amidala's look has been, it's set in stone. It's been, what's the word I'm looking for? In
Iconic?
Yes, yes, iconic. Thank you. It's iconic. Like, people know who that is. It's always going to be her look. It's not like, you know, the new Star Wars where you know Rey, but do you really know the other characters and what they wear? Not really. But this one, like, it's very iconic. It's very well known. It's very noticeable and you can recognize it anywhere. It's very recognizable. I think there's some beauty to this movie that really carries over. And like Markella said in the beginning, it's complicated. The relationship with this movie is very complicated. So I like a lot of the things that I feel are very special to it, but I also feel as though they're special because I watched it when I was 8 years old in the theater. It's like, I watched that and I'm like, oh, that's so precious. I like the characters in this one too. So
Aubrey, I feel the same way about Empire Strikes Back. I saw that when I was 4 years old, and you can't take that away from me. I'll never forget that as long as I live. It's my favorite movie of all time. So
yeah, I mean, like the characters for me, it's like they hit just this very special place in my heart. So I love watching this movie because I love seeing all of those characters. And I don't feel the same way about 2 and 3. I hate 2 and 3. But this one in particular, it's very different for me.
All right. Markellis Reagans, what are some things you like about this movie?
So some of the things I actually like about this movie, you know, when the first Star Wars came out, and it kind of took off, it got its popularity and they labeled it as Episode 4. And then we got Empire Episode 5 and Jedi Episode 6. You know, by those numbers, I felt like I was old in Episode 1. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, all right, if you're going to give me number 4, 5 and 6, then where's my Episode 1? Like, I really need that. So the fact that we were getting it was very exciting for me. So I love the idea of young Obi-Wan Kenobi, of young Palpatine. And Natalie Portman was like, she was an up-and-coming actress at the time. So the fact that they got her to be Luke and Leia's mom was like perfect casting. Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan's perfect casting. Liam Neeson, I wasn't like, you know, I mean, I like Darkman, but I wasn't like super like, you know, a big Liam Neeson fan. I kind of knew him as an actor, but not, I wasn't really too impressed by anything that he did. So I was very excited to dive back into this early Star Wars world. So all of that, all of the early stuff, all of the stuff that connects to the original trilogy, I pretty much love. I love the, like Aubrey said, the pod racing scene. Absolutely amazing. I love the idea of the double-sided lightsaber for Darth Maul. Just totally cool. I love the battle at the end of that. At the end of the movie, and I love the fact that it kind of puts the pieces in place where you get to the end of the movie and Anakin has his Padawan outfit, right? So you know he's on that journey. You know that Obi-Wan has promised that he's going to train the boy. You know that Chancellor Palpatine is going to be watching Anakin with great interest. Like, all of the pieces are put into place, and it just makes it so much more exciting to think about like what's going to happen in the future, because you know the dots are going to connect. And George Lucas, knowing that that's what has to be done and putting it in this movie, just made it fun for me. Anyway, for a fan of the original trilogy, it made it fun. My pure appreciation of this movie is completely based on all of the stuff that's outside of the movie, all of the technical aspects, the way that George Lucas was able to kind of revolutionize filmmaking in order to get this movie made. I'm pretty sure Jar Jar was the first completely fully CGI character.
If he wasn't the first character, he was the first one that was actually like part of the movie. It wasn't just like the Scorpion King shows up for like 30 seconds at the end of the movie. Like, right. Putting aside like how terrible that looked, and this was like the first like fully realized character in a movie that was CG, not just something that happened randomly or showed up for half a minute.
Right, like the stained glass knight in a young Sherlock Holmes. You know, it was like, it's a cool CG effect, but it doesn't really, it's a cool scene, but he's not a character in the story. Jar Jar is like one of the first fully CG characters that's like a main character in the story. And the fact that George Lucas pushed that so hard to get it done. And we live in a world now where, you know, Avatar, The Way of Water is just all CG characters. Like, we think nothing of it, but someone had to start that. Someone had to get to that point. Someone had to push the technology to that area. And George Lucas did it with his own money. So all the technical stuff of getting this movie made, I love. Even the toys. You know, they had the toys with the little comms that you had to stick the action figure on, and like a digital voice would come up. I mean, that's pushing it's toys, but it's still trying to push technology into another realm. Push toys.
We had the Naboo Starfighter,
mm-hmm.
and that thing was so cool. It was like a new type of toy. It made noise. It lit up. Like, it was just so different.
Yeah, so I love that Star Wars is able to be the canvas where technology can be pushed forward, and then other people can kind of, you know, see what started and then take it to the next level. So yeah, so Phantom Menace, you know, it gets a lot of crap, but it was definitely the nucleus for a lot of the cool stuff that we have today. And George Lucas, I still don't think he gets enough credit for that.
All right. Well, what did I like about the movie? I think it needs to be said that not just in this movie with Duel of the Fates and some of the other themes, but some of John Williams' best work in the entire saga are in these three movies.
Yes.
And I think the reaction, especially to like Across the Stars from Attack of the Clones, is in like my top five favorite Star Wars songs. And I hate that movie so much, but I love that song. And I remember there being a music video for Duel of the Fates that was on MTV, and they world premiered it at Star Wars Celebration. So we saw it there for the first time.
Nice.
So yeah, first off, the music, fantastic. And just Duel of the Fates is just so fucking iconic. It's so good. And it's so well timed to what's happening on screen, too, when like he takes down his hood and you're like, oh, my God, shit's about to go down. And that's, I think, the best lightsaber fight in the entire saga.
Darth Maul was definitely one of the best Sith that have come out. And his fighting style was just, it was amazing. Like, that made you sit on the edge of your seat for sure.
Yeah. And it was something different. And I mean, I think emotionally, probably and again, just because I'm an Empire Strikes Back stan, I think, you know, Luke versus Vader 1 in Empire and maybe Luke versus Vader 2 in Return of the Jedi have more emotion to them. But in terms of pure like watchability, I think that this is the best lightsaber duel in the entire saga. I also think that, what I really liked about it from watching it today was that it was unabashedly a kid's movie. Like, it was a movie, like a family movie. It was a family movie. There was no, you know, nods or winks to the camera or tip of the hat. And I think that might have been some of the backlash that happened to it, you know, after release, was that a lot of us had grown up. We had been those little kids that loved the movies. And then all of a sudden we're in our 20s and we're like, wait, this is a movie for kids. And,
right.
And we wanted serious Star Wars. We wanted Andor. And I've said it on this podcast, and I know I play it up to piss Mark off and make jokes. But if the first Star Wars thing I ever watched was Andor, I wouldn't like Star Wars because I would have been 4 years old and bored out of my fucking mind. So to me, Star Wars is always for kids. And the fact that it's a kid's movie, it's good. I think the special effects are phenomenal for the most part. Again, like I said, some of the CG on Jar Jar and some of the Gungans and stuff is a little wonky nowadays, but there's still crazy shots that hold up. And there's a space battle at the end where Anakin's in the Naboo fighter. That looks so good. It looks so good because it's the culmination of everything they learned making the first three movies with this new technology. And it just looks fantastic. And like Mark said, that technology has brought us forward into a point where we have like Avatar. It's like they're filming in front of a green screen with people with rigs on their head, and they make an entire movie out of it. That's like George Lucas did that. that is him. He did that. In terms of like things in the actual movie, besides the tone and the lightsaber fight at the end, I liked the pod racing quite a bit. And I just thought a lot of the weird characters that you meet, that like Watto and even the viceroys. I can't remember what, oh God, I'm losing my nerd cred. I can't remember what Newt, species they are. Newt Gunray and the other guy. Yeah, they have extremely racist voices, but they look great. It's a hybrid CG and practical. There's nods to Flash Gordon on their ship. So their view screen is taken right out of Flash Gordon serials. You know, and it's just the beginning of the movie right off the bat. You know, they go and Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon fight all these battle droids and droidekas and stuff on the ship. You know, it's just a good sequence. So there's definitely like parts of this that are great. It's just we'll get into that. Aubrey Litchfield, what do you not like about this movie? I know you are gushing because you just have rose tinted glasses, and I understand. I understand. But as a Phantom Menace nut hugger, is there anything you don't like about the movie?
One of the biggest things, like, it took me until I was older to really not like the Anakin and Padme relationship. Like, it was watching it now, I'm like, oh, yeah, that really didn't age very well. And it shouldn't have been good then. But, you know, when it, as an 8-year-old, I don't really know too much about it. And I think that in this one in particular, there's a lot of politics. And so, you know, again, looking back at it, I'm like, oh, as a kid, I don't know how I sat through this because these parts can be really boring. Then you see the fight scenes and it kind of makes up for it. But I mean, those things I didn't really like. It's very hard with older movies because a lot of the way that they went about filming these things and making these things, it doesn't hold up. So there are parts that you watch and you're like, oh, that looks really shitty right now. It's hard when you watch it. Like if Noah watched it today, he definitely probably wouldn't find it as great as I do. And he would probably watch it and be like, wow, this looks really shitty because I'm used to higher quality, you know?
But he also likes Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. So.
This is true. Yeah, he did make his dad go and see it too. His dad came down for the weekend, so he saw it a second time in theaters.
Oh, wow.
He's a big fan. So, yeah, I mean, there's things about this that I think don't hold up the relationship between Anakin and Padme. It's too obvious in this one. In the next ones, you know, he's older. It's not as bad. You don't really think about it as much. But in this one in particular, he's really young and he looks really young and she's old. So that's really hard. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of talking in this that makes it a little bit boring. But other than that, I mean, I don't know. And like I said, I kind of look at it a different way. So it's hard for me to find things that I completely don't like because I kind of just look past it, I guess.
All right. Marcellus Reagans, what about you?
So things that I did not like. I was not a big fan of Jar Jar. I'm not going to lie.
You know, Mark, I got to tell you, watching it today, I was like, ooh, this almost feels like racist.
Yeah, it walks a line. It walks a razor's edge. Nothing against the actor. I thought the actor.
And I don't think the actor or George Lucas meant it that way under any circumstance. But like, it just feels weird
because he's given a whole new canvas to do a Star Wars movies. And if you look at the other movies, everyone's British. You know what I mean? So he's like, maybe I have to incorporate some new cultures inside of the Star Wars universe without ripping off other cultures. And you know, he tried, he swung, you know, they didn't all quite land, and I'll give him points for trying. I really will. But yeah, the Jar Jar thing, like Jar Jar is exactly what George wanted to have in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it worked. And I don't think anyone wanted to tell him that, or everyone just had blind faith that he knew what he was doing. And you know, this is the guy who created Star Wars, so he's allowed to miss a few. But yeah, the whole Jar Jar thing, I'm just not a fan of I'm a fan of what he's supposed to represent. I'm just not a fan of how the character represents it. But I like what he's supposed to represent, the kind of childlike person that gets caught up into this world, almost like a Luke Skywalker type of thing. You know, and I will agree with Aubrey, there's a lot of politics in this movie. Again, this is what George Lucas wanted. I think now as an adult, I can really appreciate it a lot more. But at the time, you know, it was like one of those things like, yeah, that's great. But where's the lightsabers? Let's get to the fight stuff. Let's get to the Darth Vader stuff. I couldn't care less about Chancellor Valorum. He didn't even do anything.
Yes, had his action figure, though. He didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I had an action figure of the droid at the beginning that serves them tea, and it came with a tray with fucking tea on it.
So, yeah, so the politics, I didn't really mess with at all. I appreciated being there. I really did not like them killing Darth Maul. I thought that was one of the biggest mistakes of the entire prequel trilogy, because he, like, thematically, I mean, I understand why, and George Lucas has explained it over and over again, why he had to kill off that character, but as a person watching a movie, even as a kid, he's so well established as a villain. Even if he's not the Phantom Menace, he's established as a villain so strongly that you want more of him. And killing him off in the first movie just, it was awful. It was awful. His villainous arc could have gotten so much better in the movies, in the next two movies. And then the other thing that I'm not a fan of the movie is the fact that, you know, I did want a Saturday morning serial adventure of a movie from episode one. Like, episode four pretty much established the rules. Episode one tries to live by those rules and incorporate a little bit more into it, but it didn't feel like a fun, rollicking adventure to me anyway when I first saw it. But it did spark a lot of good conversation. Me and Tom used to have long conversations about what we would have done if we could have did episode one. Mm-hmm. You know, how we would have done episode one. So it sparked a lot of conversation among Star Wars fans, which is good. But I wish that it would have had a little bit more of that serial Saturday afternoon adventure-ness to it. And it doesn't quite have that. So that's one of the other things that I didn't like about it.
All right. You know, I said one thing I loved about the movie was the tone, and that was definitely for kids. But I'll agree with you guys. There is a lot of talking in this, and a lot of it is bad. And I think a lot of the problems with this movie come from, you know, we all were happy. We said it was the thing we liked, that it's George Lucas's vision on screen. It's what he wanted and only what he wanted. And goddamn anyone else. He paid for the whole thing himself. He's making his movie.
Right.
But I really think this would have benefited from a lot like, you know, the first Star Wars. And that's not to take anything away from him being a creative force behind episode four. But he also had his wife in editing, who was able to be kind of on the same level as him and say, hey, you know, let's do this. Let's cut this. Let's try this here. He had other people working at ILM that would, you know, push back on him. Whereas here, and I don't want to spoil your recommendation, Mark, but if you watch a certain thing, you can see that most of the people there are just very happy to be there. No one wants to upset the cart, you know? No one wants to step aside and say, hey, this kind of isn't working, or maybe we should try this. Because to me, and you just mentioned it, Mark, too, talking about how would you do different, you know, to me, the biggest mistake of this whole trilogy is Anakin being so young in this movie.
Right. But there's a reason for it. And George Lucas stands by his reasoning.
That's fine. And it's his reason. And, you know, but my rationale is that you make him, if Natalie Portman is what, 16 in this?
14,
15. You make Anakin the same age, and you make him like a badass Han Solo type who's leading a slave rebellion. And that's why the Jedi have to go there to figure out what's going on. And now you can have them falling in love, and you can have the audience fall in love with Anakin instead of finding him annoying. So what happens in the next two movies is even more heartbreaking. To me, this prequel trilogy should be the opposite of the original trilogy. It should be, instead of things start out bad and then they end good, it should be they start out good and then they end bad. And if they're crafted correctly, the end of the third movie should be absolutely fucking heartbreaking, not us laughing at how stupid it is. Like, you should be screaming no at the screen as he's turning to the dark side. You should be so upset, and he's making the opposite choices that Luke did, is what we should be seeing on screen. And instead, we wasted a whole movie of character development for Anakin, so he had to be like seven in this. So, like,
yeah,
you know. That's always been my thing with the prequels, you know, just center it on Naboo or Tatooine, you know, get them there somehow and make it work. But, you know, just nobody could say no to George. So that's why you get a little too much Jar Jar. You know, you get a lot of talking, you get weird direction where Natalie Portman is horrendous in this movie. especially as Amidala. I get that we're supposed to believe that like she acts a certain way as the queen, and then she can disguise herself as a handmaiden to go out and do things.
Right.
But it does. It's not really established well in the script. So it just seems like she's like, I will not lead my people to war. It sounds like she's on fucking like morphine or something while she's delivering her lines. It's just so bad. You know, that's some of the direction is bad, and some of the choices are bad. And it is what it is. I mean, it's the movie he wanted to make at the end of it. I there was just too much Gungans to me. There was too much Jar Jar, and there was just Anakin as a little kid is just such a misfire that like it really hurts the movie to me, because I can't identify with the main character, because I was at the time in my 20s. Now I'm in my 40s, and I can't identify with a like 7-year-old kid that not just is there's nothing about him that you're like, oh yeah. Like the only time you get it during the movie is when he's in the pod race.
Yes.
If you had kept him with that kind of attitude and like underdog stick to itness, I guess, for lack of a better term, I think the movie works better. But he's like, yippee. And then he's cool in the pod race, and then he's not cool again for the rest of the movie. So the idea that he's not cool is very hard for me to deal with. But that's it.
I think that Anakin as a kid too really hurts like the idea that he's Luke and Leia's father too, because he's like a kid, and somehow him and Natalie Portman fall in love in the second movie, and it's like you don't buy it.
I don't want to say like I wasn't some ladies man, you know, when I was a teen, but like I could not understand being like, there's no romantic tension between a 14-year-old and a 7-year-old, you know. There's no way to work that. If you make Anakin a little older, he doesn't have to be the same age as her. He could be 13 or 12, but you make him a little older so they can at least flirt and it's not creepy. And he can kind of be more of a cool character that you're like, wow, I like Anakin. Like, not like, oh, wow, he's annoying. I think the whole movies work better and you're probably a little less Gungan. But, you know, I mean, that's really it for things I didn't like. I think at the end of the day, it's been 25 years, and it's a lot easier watch when you don't have those extreme expectations on it. And the parts I like, I really like. And the parts I don't like, I honestly don't hate them as much as I did. Maybe I'm getting soft in my old age, but they're just, you know, I just, the expectation now watching it is there's some really cool parts, and it's just not that as good as the other movies I like in the saga. So I think
it makes it easier that 2 and 3 came out too. So like, of course it was hated when it first came out because 2 and 3 hadn't come out yet. Now 2 and 3 come out and you're like, okay, it's not so bad.
Well, it's weird because some people rate 3 super high, and I think it's the best of the three of them, but it's not great by any stretch of the imagination. And I think 2 is a fucking abomination. It's the worst of the Star Wars, worse than fucking Rise of Skywalker. And Mark knows how that goes. You
know? Yeah, you'll get no argument from me on that one.
Yeah. So yeah, that's, you know, what we thought about it. I guess we should probably give it a score, a 25 year later rating of The Phantom Menace. Aubrey, on a scale of 0 to 5, with 5 being the best and 0 being the worst, what do you got?
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Wow. All right. Markel,
I'd give it a 4, but like I'm kind of like back and forth. I think a 3.5 is pretty good.
All right. Markelis Reagans, how about you?
Oh, that is super ironic. Aubrey, I was in the exact same boat, and I am also going to give it a 3.5.
Guess what?
What?
I am also going to give it a 3.5. And honestly, I know somebody out there screaming at their phone or radio saying this movie's horrible. Fuck you. It's a 0. I'm wrapping in with the movie, like all of the pageantry around it, and rating all of that together. So a world where I was so excited for Star Wars that I flew across the country to stand in a line in torrential rain for 3 hours. was part of it. So, you know, the pageantry, the hype, everything that goes with it, and the movie itself, I'm giving it a 3.5. And I just watched it today, so I feel kind of confident with that 3.5. But
there you go.
Maybe we got it right and maybe we got it wrong. Hit us up on social media and let us know what you think. And now we're going to wrap it up. Before we tap it up, let's get some recommendations for the listeners out there. Aubrey Litchfield, what do you got?
So I recommended this around Christmas time, but I'm going to recommend it again because I'm finally playing it. But Hogwarts Legacy is so fun. I've been playing it all week, and I haven't let Max use the TV in a week. And I've it's also been to the point where like I'm staying up far too late and then I'm waking up for work and I'm exhausted, but I can't stop myself. I just keep playing it. It's so fun.
Well, I was on mute. I had a really hot take. No, I'm kidding, but I was on mute. All right, Marcellus Reagans, how about you?
Well, we alluded to it earlier. There is a documentary about the making of episode one, The Phantom Menace. And you know what? I bought like the I've bought Star Wars on home video multiple times throughout my life, home media throughout my life. So I broke out the Blu-rays. So I really wanted to watch that documentary again. And I could not find it on the Blu-ray.
It's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. So I went and found my original Phantom Menace on DVD, the first Star Wars movie on DVD. And I watched it on there, physical media forever. But I did, as you just mentioned, Joey, it is available on YouTube. It's on the Star Wars YouTube page. It's called The Beginning, Making Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. And it's filled with so many amazing sequences. There's a scene of Frank Oz, who comes back to do Yoda, getting a look at the digital puppet of Watto. You know what I mean? And him realizing that, oh, maybe you're not going to need me anymore. There's an awesome scene where Ben Burtt realizes that George Lucas is able to digitally change an actor's performance, which, you know, opens up editing to a whole new world. But, you know, as he states in the movie, if there's something wrong in that take, they'll just throw away the whole take. And now with what George Lucas is doing, they could just throw out the bad stuff and keep the good stuff. So he just completely changed the world of editing all because of this movie. And this movie is filled with just amazing little buttons like that. John Williams conducting Duel of the Fates. It's amazing. So it's on YouTube, The Beginning, The Making of Phantom Menace. Highly recommend it.
So I have a confession to make, Mark.
Yes.
Sometimes when I feel down, I'll watch the very end of that documentary where everyone is going to the theater to see it for the first time, and Rick McCallum comes out and he's like, "This is fucking awesome."
Yeah.
And everybody goes nuts. And then my favorite thing in that whole documentary is the movie starts, everybody cheers, then it gets dead silent. Then the second Star Wars comes on the screen, people just lose their fucking minds.
Yes.
And it makes me happy. So sometimes if I'm not feeling great, I'll watch that.
There is something, I don't know, it's maybe it's because of the original movie, but there is something in that you're in a dark theater, you see those blue letters, you know, a long time ago, Galaxy Far, Far Away, it gets completely dark and silent, and then Star Wars and the loudest fanfare ever made hits the screen. There's something very, like, I don't know, not enjoyable, but cathartic about that sequence. I love that.
Yeah. So I will recommend that you go to SoWizardPodcast.com, where you can find the podcast every week. Links to all our social media accounts on the right-hand side of the page. Links to all our YouTube and Patreon content, as well as movie reviews from Stu from SWO Productions. So check it out at SoWizardPodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Good Pods, or just about anywhere under the sun you find podcasts. We'll be there. Check out the aforementioned YouTube channel. There's hours of free exclusive content there. This week, Adam will be dropping some cool videos. We've got a review, our first screener from Shudder. I'm really excited. Well, I was really excited. Let me paraphrase that. I was really excited until I saw it was a movie all about spiders.
Oh,
and I'm like, I ain't fucking watching that. So Adam stepped up and he will be having a review of Infested on our YouTube channel soon. And I've heard great buzz from other people that aren't terrified of spiders. So maybe we'll see if he likes it. And don't forget our Patreon, where you can monetarily support the show and get extra exclusive content. It's the only place to hear us discussing all the news and trailers around the movies we watch on the show, as well as my mini-sodes every month, which tell you what's going on behind the scenes and what's coming up. And now all our paid Patreons, every single paid Patreon, $1 or $3, doesn't matter, you get the show raw every single week, minutes after we finish recording. So unedited, no music, no sound drops, all the flubs, all the mistakes. Maybe you want to see how it looks before it gets prettied up. You can do that by paying us on Patreon. I will recommend, I don't know, go watch fucking Star Wars. I will recommend watching Star Wars again. I will recommend following us on TikTok, because I procured a half gallon of official Star Wars blue milk.
Yes.
And I will be taste testing it on TikTok for May the 4th. So that will be our May the 4th TikTok I'll be putting out. Will be me taste testing blue milk. And I hate milk. And I think this is just milk that's colored blue. So it should be disgusting. So we'll see what happens.
How is it possible that Star Wars came out in 77 and we're just now getting blue milk? Like, who dropped the ball there?
I think they released it like limited edition type times, because I feel like it's been released before. But
man, do you know,
they definitely have it at Galaxy's Edge in Disney World and Disneyland. But I don't know.
Yeah, that's like a
that's what I'm thinking of.
That's like a drink, blue milk, like an alcoholic drink. Like, if they had just made blue milk when I was like a kid, I would have drank so much milk. It's like, look, this is just like, I'm just like Luke Skywalker. I would have drank all the milk as a kid.
So I guess we'll see. So yeah, follow us on TikTok, watch a bunch of Star Wars, and then you know what? Head out to the theater and check out the newest movie starring He's Just Like Me and Mark, Ryan Gosling, as the Fall Guy, because that, my friends, is what we'll be reviewing next week on the podcast. That's going to do it for episode number 508 of the So Wizard Podcast. I have been your host, Joey DiCarlo. My co-hosts, the Queen of Naboo, Aubrey Litchfield.
Misa says bye-bye.
And the expert, Mr. Marquis Marcellus Reagans.
May the force be with you and Wakanda forever.
See you guys next week. And hey, you know what? Thank you, the Phantom Menace, for giving us the name of the podcast. So.
Yes.
We'll see you next time. Good journey.